This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Finding Your Bliss with host Judy Liebrack, heard every Saturday at 1 p.m. on Zoomer Radio.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Finding Your Bliss, the show that helps you find and follow your bliss. I'm Judy Liebrack, and this show is really all about helping you learn how to love yourself and enjoy a life of peace, happiness, and well-being. And in today's troubled world, we love when we meet experts who can help us achieve that. And today we have a wonderful guest on the program who really has a game-changing approach to self-care and personal transformation. We're going to find out all about how you can boost your mental health and how you can get on a path towards lifelong well-being when we meet psychotherapist Rachel Kaplan, who is here to talk about her latest book, Feel, Heal, and Let That Stuff Go. And of course, stuff is a much more colorful word, which we're not going to say on the show, but you know what it is, and it really does work. Also, later on in the program, we have talented singer-songwriter Jules Halpern, who's not only going to sing for us, but she's also going to tell us about an exciting new venture. But first, let me tell you a little bit more about our first guest, Rachel Kaplan. Rachel Kaplan, MA, MFT, is a licensed psychotherapist with a thriving practice in the San Francisco Bay Area, creator and host of the acclaimed podcast, Healing, Feeling, SH, you know what?
Asterisk.
Asterisk show. She has a TEDx talk that's fabulous. I watched that, Inner Talks That Heal, which explores the internal relationship between our loving and wounded parts. Kaplan has studied yoga and meditation and hands-on healing practices in India and Nepal. She earned a master's degree in counseling psychology from the California Institute of Integral Studies, and she trained in cutting-edge trauma modalities such as EMDR. She divides her time between Oakland and Joshua Tree, California. How delightful. Congratulations, Rachel, on your latest book and on your TED Talk, too.
Thank you so much.
We're going to unpack it all today. Rachel Kaplan, welcome to Finding Your Bliss.
Thank you so much for having me.
Rachel, as we sort of start to talk about off the top, we're living in a time where people are actually talking about feeling our feelings, which is great, but many of us don't know how to do it. And your latest book, Feel, Heal, and Let That Stuff Go, which we know what it really says, more colorful word, is a wonderful springboard to start. But before we get into the book, I know that you had a very traumatic thing happened to you when you were only 14 years old. Your teenage boyfriend committed suicide, and I can't even imagine how devastating that must have been for you. Can you tell us how this tragedy led you down not only your own path of healing, but a path of healing for others as well?
Well, it's a good question. It's definitely where this story starts. Even though I do like to say for listeners, I had the same wounding that we all have. Anyone raised by humans has a certain degree of wounding, and that's what the book addresses. So I had all of that. But yes, before I was even really developed as a self-loving adult, really, I was still a child in most ways, I had this unbearable pain. I was really looped into his death story in a way that was a trap. And for people who want, if you need a good cry, a lot of us have trouble crying, hence the book. This story is laid out in a beautiful like memoir. It's scored in episode 4 of season 1 of my podcast. So you can hear the whole story. But I will just say that any suicide is a tremendous burden on anyone left in the wake. But there was a particular way that I was kind of pulled in and I'd say attacked through the story, through the experience, trapped really. And so as far as how that led to my own healing and my life of being a companion for those healing, first of all, the first couple years I wanted to die, I actually tried to stop him from taking his life by promising that I would also take mine.
Oh,
Yeah.
Horrible.
But knew in a tragic way, actually, that I wasn't going to do that. And in the beginning, that was actually incredibly painful because people who have that fantasy are really imagining a way out. We can get into metaphysically if it's actually a way out, but I don't think that's where we're going right now. But it took a couple years, and it wasn't until I caught feelings for someone, and I know that that's what people say these days, but it really felt like that because I was trying not to, that I realized how wounded I was and that I couldn't sustain emotion for anyone who wasn't in my view, really. Even when my sister went to college, I was like, you're dead to me. So finally, I thought, I'm empty inside. I have a hole and I won't be able to build a life over this hole. And I need help. And so I got into therapy. And interestingly and beautifully, my high school therapist wrote the foreword for my book. She traveled out to see my TEDx talk. We have since reconnected. And I found out years ago that my podcast, season one, is mandated listening for her patients. So it's been this beautiful kind of full circle. She essentially helped me start to feel again. Most of us, when we try to avoid our feelings, the best strategy most of us have is intellectualizing and thinking. There's lots of ways, we'll get into that. But most of us just live in our heads instead of our bodies, and especially when there's tremendous heartbreak and pain. And so she kind of didn't allow that. And I could tell you how, but essentially she limited my vocabulary and she helped me start to drop down the few inches of my neck and start to encounter how desperately sad I was. And it sparked a beautiful healing journey, actually, which started with that boyfriend leaving me, the next boyfriend. I was so terrified to be left again because that was, of course, the source of so much pain. And when it happened, the boyfriend went to college and begged me to stay with him. And when he finally agreed, he left and he really dropped me and started dating who I called Trippy Chick. It was really like being brought back to that source of pain, but realizing I wasn't that person. And this beautiful, sensual, colorful new chapter began where I had this sense of things happening for a reason. But what's fascinating is that it would be another 25 years, I'd say, of healing and moving down this path before I reach the place that the book and the podcast are founded on, which is this place of deep emotional resilience and lasting self-love. And those qualities are both in the title. I do think that my practice of emotional potty training, learning how to move the feelings, how to feel the feelings, that's what it leads to. And so for me, everything I've done, you know, I was a very good therapist for a full decade before I reached that place where I was like, oh my God, I actually love myself. I never thought I'd feel this well. And what I will say is that everything I've been doing in the last 8 years, the podcast, the book, this like unstoppable urge to teach and to share is really trying to help. Most people are getting to about 60% of true healing and well-being, 70% maybe. And I was for sure, I had this fantastic looking life, but I still had that wound inside whispering, am I enough? Am I okay? Am I lovable? And so the intensity, the fervor that I'm sharing is really helping people understand what made the difference so that people can expedite.
So what helped you get over to the next 30%? What would you say, like just in 25 words or less, helped you go from 60, 70% to 100% getting there? Was it a combination of all the things or was there a really great tip that people can utilize?
Yeah. I mean, it's a two-phase approach. I'd say the thing that helped me the most, and then I'll give a specific tip for your listeners, was finding the parts of me that were in so much pain that were still living with this deep wound that I'm not lovable, I'm doomed to be left. And inviting them in, learning how to care for them until they were safe enough to show me the pain. And then, and this is what's really fascinating for your people as a meditation teacher, learning the skill of how to actually become the pain and feel the pain as if it's true. Because our modern day spiritual world, the new age world, cognitive behavioral therapy, you know, most therapists are going to be like, honey, it wasn't your fault. It was your parents. It was this and that.
Right, right.
But the reality is, and I could go into the why and the how on this, but there's a very good reason most people walk around feeling like there's something wrong with them. It's actually the most adaptive strategy as a young, dependent, vulnerable child to assume that instead of realizing you're innocent and the people taking care of you are causing you pain, that's incredibly vulnerable, right? If you feel into that, you have no say, You depend on these people. They're hurting.
Right, right.
The alternative is maybe I could do better. Maybe dad was right and I should have cleaned my room, or I shouldn't take up so much space, or I should be easy. And so as young people, we actually assume blame, and whatever we think causes us to lose connection with the parents, we're going to push away, right? And the parents, even the best, most loving parents or caregivers, it's not always parents, are going to say, shh, you're okay. There's nothing to be afraid of. You know, there's no monster. You're fine. Yes. And so the pains that we were in, the feelings that we were organically, naturally in as little people were constantly dismissed, even out of love. And so when we tell ourselves, whether it's because a therapist is helping us be kinder to ourselves, or a meditation teacher is teaching us to not identify with our thoughts and feelings, when we tell ourselves those things of it's not true, it was their fault, we're basically dismissing that pain inside. Mm-hmm. And the reality is that there is a skilled approach to learn, which I won't go into the whole thing because that's the book and we're going to get into it, but how to find, court those parts and actually bring the consciousness, bring your awareness into the pain and become it and release it from there. Mm-hmm. And then skillfully move out of it. And until we do that, we're essentially just continuing to compartmentalize this pain. And you have this very beautiful developed narrative on the surface, but deep down, there's this lurking feeling that I'm actually as bad.
Not to simplify this, but isn't it in a way like, don't go around the puddle, go through the puddle. You've got to go through the pain. You got to go through it. You got to face it, sit in it, splash, cry, do it all. Yeah. And if you don't, you're not going to emerge out of the puddle with the same kind of well-being, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. The only way out is through. But most people, even if they start to feel the pain, they're going to talk themselves out of it. Mm-hmm. Especially the people who are training in this and trying to, you know, scaffold it spiritually. It's true. We're not our feelings any more than we are our poops. But we still, they're real. We still have to move them. We still have to have them.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
You call yourself an unfortunate expert in all this. Can you tell us a little bit more about your brainchild? It's one thing to think all of this and to do therapy. It's nothing to sit down and write a book. And I know this because I've written a few books and I give such kudos to you because, first of all, was it a long process? Was it an arduous process? Can you tell us about what led to and what it was like to write this beautiful book?
Sure. Well, you asked about what made the difference. One of the things was I got married to someone where it was a very non-viable relationship, just mechanically unsound. And I was, during that marriage, working with the most brutal, intense healer I've ever worked with. He is not a therapist, lives in a mud hut in the Southwest. And there were some really wild components of my healing work, like primitive earth skills, like the crux of my healing and actually the healing around the dead boyfriend, involved bringing forth fire with Bodril, which is fire by friction, a whole process. We won't go into that. But basically, I was fighting for my life because I wanted to save this marriage. Finally, and actually without effort, on the 22-year anniversary of this first boyfriend's death, I realized if I have any desire to have well-being in my life, I had to leave this marriage.
Wow.
I left on that anniversary, ended up finding this beautiful apartment I'm in now, was going to move on a Monday. The movers were like, it's too rainy. They pushed it back a day to the dead boyfriend's birthday.
Oh,
so there was this beautiful
goodness.
Kind of like sacred container of this terrible marriage. Bless his heart. I'm so grateful for him and the way we didn't get along. But so that happened. And I moved through into this like space of sovereignty and aloneness. I was traveling the world. And about a year after, I was in Joshua Tree for the first time on a mountain and doing like a little bit of a sacred ritual, which long story short, I ended up watching a video of myself. And I remember looking and being like, wow, I really love this woman. And it just kind of lit up this experience of having had a year to myself and in my own energy of reckoning with how well I was, you know, really being able to celebrate it. And so at some point during my healing work with this mentor, he said, you know, Rachel, you know, the healing you're receiving is a debt. He said, there's only one way to pay back this debt. And it's to really claim your life and to share. And when he said that, I was like, okay, I didn't totally get it. But after, within a month, I was like, I have to make a podcast.
Yes.
So when I released season one of the Healing Feeling Blank show, it was really the bones of the book. And it wasn't a podcast. It was a transformational course. But it was the book of the writing is really like this huge binder. It was really a book. The beginning of 2019, when I launched it, for about 8 months working with an editor and trying to turn my initial writing and the transcripts into a book. And then right at the beginning of the pandemic, I pitched my little book to New York and they were like, we don't care about your book, little girl, you know, not like I was a little girl, but that was the vibe I got back. And it became very clear very quickly, I'm not sure about you, but that I needed to have a platform and a following. Mm-hmm. And so essentially I just set that goal down and I started actually making YouTube videos. And then I started making TikTok videos and started getting some traction. And then eventually one of those videos went viral on Instagram. It got almost like 2 million views.
Wow. Which video? Which video?
It's basically saying that 70% of our challenges and problems or questions that someone would have for me as a therapist have the same answer, and that I would tell them the answer, and that it was basically people need to learn to feel their pain. I was wearing a rainbow crocheted sweater, which I do think helped because most of the women were like, where do I get your sweater? And I was like, look at the comments, but thank you for engaging. Some of the my favorite comment was, this sounds reasonable, but you're wearing a potholder. I loved it. I was like, you win. But anyway, so I went from having almost 2,000 followers to like 112,000 followers in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And so at that point, I was like, okay, I should try again for the agent. And during that process, I revisited the manuscript and I was like, this is terrible. It really was because of the oral component. And so I did an entire re-edit with this fantastic editor I found. So even before I got the book deal, I had edited it multiple times, as you know. And then, of course, when I got the publisher to work with me, it was a big journey there. And I was shocked. I mean, just the layers, the amount of time. But the truth is that this is deeply my calling. It doesn't seem like the book is necessarily going to change my life that I've written it, but I know if people pick it up, it will change their lives. And that Amazing. Is beautiful and satisfying.
When you got your box in the mail or by courier delivery, I don't know how you got it, and you saw lots of these, this beautiful, it's such also for the listeners until the YouTube video comes, Feel, Heal, and Let That Stuff Go, which is SH, you know what, go, Your Guide to Emotional Resilience and Lasting Self-Love by Rachel Kaplan. When you saw that, when you unboxed your box of books, what did that feel like?
Definitely wild and really wonderful. I mean, they let me design the book a little bit. So it really feels like an expression of me. I love rainbows. I love colors. I feel like it's warm and engaging. And it was a real journey actually with the title. I wanted to call it Emotional Potty Training for Grownups. That is what I call my approach.
Yes.
Which was a humbling journey. I mean, I can't believe I'm going to die on the hill of like equating selling people their own pain in the metaphor of their feces. I'm like, marketing team should have gotten to me earlier, but it's just the single most illuminating way to understand how to relate to our emotions. But I will tell you that the dear older white ladies of the publishing industry were like, honey, we don't talk about poop. And I'm like, I know, but I can't stop. So yeah, it was a journey finding the right title. First, it was emotional potty training. They were like, no way, which I think is valid. Mm-hmm. It's infantilizing.
Right.
But then we at some point came to how to feel your feelings, which is really what it is. And if you can believe it, there's not a book called How to Feel Your Feelings.
Yes.
But people don't want to learn to feel their feelings.
No, no.
And there was no spice. Like the spice was in the subtitle. And yeah. I am really irreverent and spicy. And so this was like the solution we found.
It's true. This is also a beautiful gift, everyone, because I'm looking at it and not to just focus on the superficial aspects, but it's yellow and happy with rainbow colors. And it makes you feel good. Like you want to read it. You want to put it on your bedside and read it and feel better, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, I really love that. Also, have you thought about comedy ever?
Everyone who's ever heard me talk is like, I'm like, I miss my calling, but yeah.
So are there ways of feeling more appropriate than others? Where do we draw the line when it comes to feelings? And really what I want to understand is how does feeling really lead to healing? Don't answer that just yet. We'll be right back with Finding Your Bliss and Rachel Kaplan after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by Create, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
Create is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. Create is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, Create is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. Create has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? Create Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about Create Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back, and this is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio AM 740. This segment is sponsored by Toronto's finest dry cleaners, who I've been using for over 25 years, and that is Ashford Cleaners, Toronto's best fabric care since 1995. And we're so happy to introduce our listeners to this wonderful family-owned business. Welcome, Ashford Cleaners, to Finding Your Bliss. I'm here in studio with Rachel Kaplan, and just before the break, I was asking Rachel, how does feeling actually lead to healing?
Yeah, thank you. Well, here's the deal. As I spoke to you, you know, when we were little, this really starts at the beginning of our lives. And the reason why I'm using a metaphor that is given to tiny infants, like when they're ready to learn to take responsibility for going to the bathroom, it's like we were all taught that, luckily, right? And we know that when we get that cramping sensation, you've probably already had it today, that it's time to use the bathroom, that no amount of new purchases, you know, new clothes, new followers, new downloads, smoking, eating, drinking will remove that feeling of needing to poop. Like the only way to not have to poop is to go to the bathroom and leave a poop. We say take, but we don't take it, right? And then we wash up and it's not a big deal. But we know that there's no other solution to that feeling.
Right.
Now, we weren't, when we were little, we weren't taught that about our emotions. Our parents probably didn't know that themselves. And good Lord, they were trying to keep us alive and fed. And it's quite a project. Children often have feelings about, you know, the blue versus the green sippy cup. Right. And so it's like you can't always indulge. And I think current day parents are doing, we're going to see what happens with their kids. I think kids' feelings are way more indulged now. And maybe it's gone too far. Not sure. But anyway, we weren't taught that. Instead, we were taught we're fine. We shouldn't take up space. Depending on gender conditioning, it can look differently. And we were plopped in front of screens or given treats or kind of shamed and shunned out of those messy emotional parts of us. Mm-hmm. And so by the time someone is an adult, listening to your podcast, reading my book, they are usually sitting on decades of emotions that became shoved down inside them, like constipated emotionally, instead of feeling clear and like an adult, the adult that they are, because they never learned the appropriate way to move the feeling. So why is it so healing to have our feelings? It's that if we don't get to live in our bodies, there's no peace. We're usually, I call it drug of choice. The ways we try to avoid ourselves, it could be as simple as I said, like the intellectualizing, which most people are doing. Mm-hmm. But most of the time it's like addiction, drugs, pornography, substances, overeating, distraction. And so those patterns of trying to outrun our pain, they corrupt our lives.
Yeah.
They ruin our relationships. And there's never any relief if only they worked, right? It would be great if I bought enough sweaters that I felt fine.
Right. I see this actually with ex-smokers who have quit smoking and they've pushed down their feelings with those cigarettes for so many years that all of a sudden without the cigarette, what do you do? What do you do with all these feelings that are rising up to the surface? You can't push them down anymore with the cigarette. So what are you going to do? You have to feel them in order to heal. And I wonder also where yoga and meditation come in here, because one of the biggest things I'll say to someone who's an ex-smoker is start breathing with yoga, start doing meditation, find a way to deal with those feelings without, you know, without the cigarette.
Yeah. The smoker is probably going to look for the next thing to try to push it down until they build the skills. I mean, if it was as simple for most of us as just feel your feelings, we would just need a bumper sticker and not a book.
Right.
The reality is that the way that we get rid of the feelings when we're young is often we distance from the parts of us that had all the feelings, the sensitive parts of us, the parts that had needs, the parts that felt disappointed. And so for most people, once they decide they want to feel their feelings, it really is a skill set they have to rebuild. Mm-hmm. And eventually it becomes so natural, so organic, and you'll get really good at it. It won't be a bigger deal than going to the bathroom. It's not that you need to focus the rest of your life on becoming obsessed with feeling your feelings. Mm-hmm. I can talk about the phases that this skill set usually comes in, which is pretty important. But it's like you're trying to get a very big, compacted thing to move through you without necessarily having a lot of tools and without necessarily having a relationship or even awareness of the part that's hurting. Mm-hmm. And that's why there are two phases. We usually have to find and rebuild trust with the part of us that we've cast out. I call it in the emotional basement closet before our pain will really come up. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you disengage from the addiction, the feelings are there. Mm-hmm. But then usually we need to learn the tools of how do you bring your awareness into them? How do you actually physically move them? Because they're very physical. If you take the E off the word emotion, it's motion. They are meant to move through us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people, I'm sure you've heard this, energy and motion, they say. Mm-hmm. They have different energetic shapes, but they're very physical, just like the signal that you need to use the bathroom is very physical. Mm-hmm. So there's very practical ways you can learn to move the different basic feelings, the primary colors of feelings, mm-hmm. that will help you both learn how to appropriately deal with a feeling that comes on you from life, like sure. if you have a hard day, but sure. also to do the proactive work of digging in and finding that old pain and moving it one little emotional poo at a time, which is what is necessary if you want to get to that over 70% place of really loving yourself. You have to kind of clear out the backlog. It's not just about feeling what's happening in current time, but also getting current with yourself, releasing the decades of unfelt feelings.
So what are some of the skills that you need to move you forward? Can you take us through them?
Okay, sure. I just kind of referenced this. There are two types. One is reactive emotional release work, and that's when you had a hard day, life squeezed you, you're a tube of toothpaste, feelings are coming out. And for that, it's easier generally because life happened to you and you're feeling. And it's the skills are really about getting to a place where you feel safe, where you're not going to harm someone else, not dumping on others, not hurting yourself. Right. And it depends on the feeling. And I'll come into that in 1 second. The other, like I said, is proactive. And that's where it's more like if you were to do yoga or meditation and go to the gym where you're setting up a time to have a specific experience.
Right.
You might be really neutral that day. You're not necessarily triggered or else now you're in reactive emotional release. Mm-hmm. And that requires different skills. But before I go into the skills, I'll say this. There's two main patterns or movement types that feelings run in, basically. Mm-hmm. They're very simple. They're either explosive or implosive. Mm-hmm. So, and I teach about four main emotions. I do talk about happiness in the book, but the four emotions that we encounter, the four wounded emotions or the four emotions that generally people have avoided are anger, sadness, fear, and shame.
I love this. So if you name it, so I think this is what you were referring to before. If you just name one of those, don't get all complicated.
Yeah.
Just reduce it to one of those four.
Yeah.
That will do what for you?
Well, that starts you actually directly experiencing it. And that was what the high school therapist, I would be like, I'm frustrated. She was like, nope, you have four words. And she didn't use shame. She used glad. But I think shame is the belly of the beast. It's where everyone gets to. So naming it is helpful in the service of bridging you to the felt experience of it. Mm-hmm. But let's say you're feeling really angry. You've been struggling at work. You're not into the politics. You're worked up. You're angry. You feel right. like you want to yell at all the drivers, your kids, whatever. Yeah. So you might think, okay, I need to have an anger session. So anger, do you think it's explosive or implosive?
Well, it's explosive, right?
It's explosive. It's absolutely right. the essence of explosives. Like right. we heat rises, it goes from the center of our being out. We want to explode. We want to hit people, right?
Right.
Yell at people. So for that kind of work, if you were doing a proactive session around anger, you could do it in the middle of your day. You could do it when you have caffeine in your system because it's about a frenetic energy, an active energy. It's an incredibly physical one. And depending on your mobility, like you might want to ring pillows or scream into a pillow if you don't have a lot of range of mobility. If you're pretty active, you might want to throw things or hit your bed when you're trying to feel your anger. Mm-hmm. Connect in. Tune into what you're angry about. For anger, sometimes it helps to verbalize it or to write, to really kind of conjure up the rage and the venomous, vile, murderous beast within you. And some people need to say, you know, the people who are like, oh, but am I going to create more anger in my life? You know, the my reality folks, which I'm sure are some of your people. Yeah. You might have to say to the universe, hey, I don't mean this. I'm doing this to actually become more balanced and to be a safer person.
Wow. Do you feel a sense of relief after all? Because,
oh yeah,
to me, you feel relief after you let it out.
Absolutely.
And can I ask you another question?
Sure.
So implosive to me would be shame. Implosive to me would be sadness. Although yeah. Sadness is a funny one. What is your thoughts about that?
Yeah. So just one more thing on anger, then I'll switch to the others. Yeah. So you would then physicalize it for as long as you can muster. You might need little breaks. And then there is a practice at the end of every feeling session. It's a place I suggest thinking, which I don't suggest very often. There's two places in my work I suggest thinking. And it's what I call reality testing. So you've had the feeling. And while you're having the feeling, you're not trying to talk yourself out of the feeling. You're not in a debate. And that's the question why, which is actually a video. The first video that went viral that I made was, if you want to not sabotage your healing, don't ask why. When a feeling starts to come up, the question why puts you back in your head.
Right.
You can reflect on your pattern of emotions when you're not trying to feel them. But in the moment, you just want to go with it. Like someone who was shamed about being sensitive, let's say, as a child. You know, you have too many feelings. You shouldn't feel this way. Mm. Our modern day self-help world is going to tell them, your sensitivity is what makes you amazing. But for someone who is just barely encountering the pain that part feels and has not really healed it much, that will not feel true. It won't do anything. It just feels like you're lying to yourself. Mm-hmm. And so what I suggest is going for a really grounded kind of thought that even the wounded part of you can believe. So for instance, with that example, you might say, God, it's sad that I was sensitive and my family didn't know how to support me. And I felt like something was wrong with me. Mm-hmm. That would be a good early stage reality tested thought that will start to build that sense of self-love from the ground up. And then also you say, given how sad, scared, mad, ashamed I am, what do I need? And so that might be where you drink water, take a walk, call a friend. So basically the point is, and I did it with anger, I'm going to come into the other feelings because you're curious. You set it up, you drop into it, you try to physicalize it, you don't ask yourself why, and then you do self-care to bring yourself out of it.
Nice.
You don't make choices or involve other people until you feel like you're fully back to your grown-up, resourced self. Okay,
nice.
So that's anger. Sadness, you so beautifully pointed out, is absolutely the epitome of implosive. Mm-hmm. And so it requires a very different setup. It won't work if we're caffeinated or we're in a busy day, because it's really about slowing down and being with this downward, aching, collapsing feeling. And so what helps us do that generally is already starting kind of slow, so maybe the morning or the evening, and having a sense of being held. If you look at children, they want to be held when they're sad. And you could be held. This is not by a human. All of my tools are going to teach you ways to not need a human, even your therapist. Wow. Because most people, that's what they rely on, is just venting through the bandwidth enhancement of another human, which is good. And sometimes we need it. But if that's the only way you can feel your feelings, it's the equivalent of needing to have a friend in the bathroom with you every time you poop. Like, not that convenient.
Right.
Everyone's maxed out.
Do you physically want people to do this, to hold on to themselves?
Well, so what I would suggest, some really good, an easy one that most people can do is you can create a little nest in your bed. Like, and this could be a weighted blanket. This could be all your blankets, be surrounding yourself with pillows, absolutely wrapping your arms around yourself. You are the grown up at this point. A bathtub, if you have one, is a fantastic way to create a sadness exercise. And then you'd bring in music, or if you are sad about a breakup, you might look at pictures or text, something that actually activates the sadness. Mm. A lot of what we experience, I think, on social media or in movies, film, is that spark of feeling that helps us come out of numbness. That's actually a decent entryway. If you're watching a cat video or you watch this rom-com and suddenly you're sad, pause it and really try to go into the sadness. Wow. But it's all about imploding, letting it go. Fear does both. Fear is really dynamic and fight and flight. Fight and flight are both frenetic, they're explosive, and freeze is implosive. And fawn is a little different. At the end of the day, once you learn to really feel the pain, which we want to do, we don't want to skip that step, or else it's like you got cut on a walk in the woods and you stitch it up without washing it out. You will be infected. That's what people are trying to do. They want to skip the pain part and go to the affirmed.
Go to the nirvana. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you heal the shame? Because I think shame is huge for people.
Well, first of all, shame is the center of the onion. It is the crux of things. So it usually doesn't present in the layers of learning to feel your feelings immediately. So you start with what's available. You might be in your grief, or you might be in your rage, but you're moving toward the part that feels like something's wrong with you. And that is really addressed from the very beginning of my book. It's like how we have these core wounds that make us feel unlovable, the reason we believe it's our fault. You're moving toward that. You're trying to invite the part in that feels so bad. You're trying to be with it. And ultimately, you're going to try to be able to tolerate and feel the pain of that experience that you've spent your whole life feeling like something's wrong with you. It's excruciating. So you feel it, you know, you get the courage, the strength as you get closer to that pain, as you notice, wow, feeling my feelings makes me feel better. You will build this sense of pride actually when you're able to stay with the pain and move the pain. Like my clients come in, they're like, I was rageful, or like I felt like poo for an hour. I'm like, yes. So it switches the whole thing. All of a sudden, everything, instead of trying to avoid this terrible secret you have that you're not enough, it becomes your VIP. You're like actually trying to be with that. And then once you allow some of that pain to flow out, eventually you have to, like I said, find the fight to be like, I'm not going to spend the rest of my short, precious life believing this lie that something was wrong with me because you, mom, couldn't meet my needs, or because you, dad, thought I should have been like this or this, or you, Keith, dead boyfriend, decided to trap me in your unbearable pain. No. And so we find that fight to claim our lives and to really fight back. And usually that's about moving into that frenetic anger work. And then I will just say that after you do that, what happens is, and this is the real final piece, once we release all this and we integrate, become who we really are, because the first step, there's parts work where we're pulling in the parts of us that are injured. That makes us feel woven together, like we are who we are. I would say self-love in my world is about being who we are and having those parts of us woven in. And then the second phase of releasing the pain they're in, that's how we get into current time. But for most people, the final step is really kind of facing the changes that happen once you are who you are and you're not full of your own pain from the last many decades. And so usually your life doesn't quite fit you in the way it used to because you've changed. And so there are changes that we face and sometimes dragons that we face down in our lives that actually help us test ourselves to realize how strong we are. And that was kind of like, I left the marriage, I spent a year on my own, I realized and woke up to who I was. And I was able to internalize, this is real. This is who I am now. And that's where you get that full blown. And then the best part, the emotional resilience, just to end here, because I know we're going to end soon. The thing is like, we all might think we want to be happy. And sure, being happy is great. I love bliss. So fun. I like feel delighted right now. But what's better than being happy, I call it, you know, the new happy, is feeling emotionally resilient, which means you know that if any feeling happens to you, if anything, if loss, tragedy, this government, whatever happens, you're going to be able to move and handle and deal with all your feelings. And so you don't have to play small. You don't have to, you can go out there like, I'm about to move in with a partner. It's terrifying because I know how bad it can be. But it's like, I just know that I'm strong enough, I'm resilient enough to handle whatever needs to happen if it's not the right thing, and I will make that change. Wow. So emotional resilience is the new happy, and that's what you get when you learn how to feel your feelings, how to move your feelings, and then you are yourself, you're actually who you really are, and you have the tools to like live a really big, beautiful, authentic life, and it's the best.
What a liberating thought. What a liberating idea. It's just so fabulous. Okay, so first of all, I want to say, in addition to this fabulous book, Feel, Heal, and Let That SH You Know What Go, Your Guide to Emotional Resilience and Lasting Self-Love, I bet you are a phenomenal therapist, I can tell. Very quickly, does everyone need a therapist? And what is the best way for someone to go about choosing one?
Absolutely. I am a good therapist. And if someone is listening and you're like, I am done being coddled, I want someone to really help me get to past 60 or 70%, call me. I have some space right now because I'm not finishing this book. As far as whether everyone needs one, I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of bad therapy. There are a lot of people, therapists, who are just reframing the person and not really helping them gain the tools they need to actually be with and become and release the part that's in so much pain. There's a lot of people who are working more with the surface versus the core. Hmm. And so I think if you're in therapy or you want to get in therapy, you want to ask yourself a few questions. Number one, are you more able to feel your feelings with your therapist, or are they giving you tools to be able to be with your feelings? Mm. Number two, do they let you talk about other people and complain about other people? That is not a good use of your money. Like, every once in a while, but if they're not in some way showing you and pinning you to where do you have agency, where are you contributing to the patterns of your life, you're wasting your money. In good therapy, you're going to have more pain before you have less pain, but there will be a gradual shift where you will start to feel more like yourself, stronger, and more capable of being in your life. And I would say more responsible for your life. So not all therapy will give you that. So you just have to, you know, figure out if it's good.
I also encourage everyone to check out, just Google Rachel Kaplan's TED Talk. So in your TED Talk, Inner Talk That Heals, you talk about the most important factor of successful healing, which is not the interpersonal relationship with the therapist, but an internal relationship between a person's resourced and loving parts and their ruined parts. He just tells very briefly about how it felt to give that TED Talk and more about it, and because I think it was very powerful.
Yeah. I mean, I really think the therapeutic industry has it wrong. Of course, it feels safe to be like unconditionally held in warm, loving regard. But if that's all you have, you're addicted to your therapist. And so I really do think that learning how do you build a bridge between the part of you that's hurting and the part of you that is so desperate to feel better and so full of love and care, it's probably that care is probably going out in your life, but how do you bring it in? It is the absolute most empowering thing. And just as far as how it was to give that talk, I did have a sprained ankle the day before I went running in the woods. Despite my intuition, I kept saying to the boyfriend, like, no, we can't run in the woods. My ankle, sure enough, sprained my ankle. And so it really took the pressure off of, do I know my talk? And put the pressure on, can I stand without yelping? It was deeply empowering and fun. You know, I really have a lot of fun. And I feel like at this point, I don't have the option to not be my weird, quirky self. And so it's great to just go and use my verbal, use my skill at speaking. So I would love if people checked it out, and it will give you a real clear snapshot of what the healing path looks like. It really does kind of break down emotional potty training.
There's a question that we ask everyone at the end of the show, and of course, we're going to ask it to you as well. What is bliss for Rachel Kaplan?
Just a few activities that give me bliss. I am a music junkie. I love occasionally, like Radiohead, being at the railing. I'll get up and get in a line to go to a concert at dawn in order to get enough space to noodle my body and translate the music through my body, especially like when I love the musicians. I mean, that is just bliss upon bliss for me. That's probably like my deepest joy. But I also just love color and design and beauty. And just love at that. This point, like just being myself is pretty blissful a lot of the time, not always.
That's so great. And what I notice about you is I think you give permission to other people to be themselves. So if you're a little bit quirky and you're a little bit colorful and you've been told all your life, squash that, it almost makes me cry. It's so beautiful that you are really giving people permission to allow that and not only allow it, to celebrate it even better.
Yeah. I mean, we need your medicine, everyone. And if you keep trying to be normal or keep it together, we're not going to get it.
So true. So powerful and wonderful. What is the best way for people to contact you, Rachel, and connect with you on social media? And of course, to get a copy of your book, Feel, Heal, and Let That SH Go.
Of course, the book is on Amazon. If you have the integrity to support your local bookstore, we love that too. Ask them to order it. Actually, that'd be great. Everything I do, you can find through thefeelingsmovement.com. And there will be links there too. Instagram's a good place to follow me. It's the name of my podcast. And the podcast is also listed there. So
on Instagram, your handle is?
Healing Feeling SHIT Show. My podcast is also that. There's an asterisk in the word we do not say on this show. SH asterisk.
Nice.
But all of that you can find through thefeelingsmovement.com.
I want to thank you so much, Rachel Kaplan, for being on the show. It's really been delightful to have you.
It's so
been
fun.
I feel good.
Me too. It was great to meet you. Thank you for having me.
You as well. We'll be right back with our next guest, talented singer-songwriter Jules Halpern, after this short commercial break. Back in a moment.
Finding Your Bliss is brought to you by CREATE, Canada's leading fertility center for over 25 years.
CREATE is here for anyone struggling with infertility or in need of assisted reproductive technology to have children. CREATE is about cutting-edge science from highly skilled doctors. In unprecedented times like these, CREATE is about ensuring the safety of all patients and staff. CREATE has made important changes to protect you by ensuring social distancing, wearing masks, as well as screening before entering. So what about the bundle of joy that you've been hoping would come into your family? CREATE Fertility Center is here for you. Visit createivf.com to keep up with the latest changes and learn about CREATE Fertility Center's comprehensive care for every fertility journey. Keep safe and healthy during these challenging days, remembering that life is about moments that we create together.
Hi, everyone. We're back. This is Finding Your Bliss on Zoomer Radio, and I'm happy. Do you know why? Because one of our favorite, most talented singer-songwriters is back on the program. We're joined by the amazing singer-songwriter Jules Halpern. Jules, it's so great to see you.
Thank you for having me for like the 8th time.
Of course. I think you're right. I think it is like number 8 or something. And as you all know, Jules has been singing since she could walk and talk. She did a performance of Stevie Wonder's Ribbon in the Sky when she was very young, which really led her to being invited to sing at many festivals and to sing the Canadian and American national anthems at Madison Square Garden in New York City. She's been recording like crazy. She does it in LA with a lot of famous, great people. So she's recording lots of new music. And she's here today to tell us about one of her upcoming releases. But what she's really here for today is to tell us about a very exciting new venture. Jules Halpern, welcome back to Finding Your Bliss.
Yes, thank you for having me once again.
Of course.
Once again, happy to be here.
I want to congratulate you on your upcoming song, Stand Beside Me. And this song, I know you've mentioned, was co-written with Scott Hoying from Pentatonix. Scott also sings all of the backgrounds on the song.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about the song and set up? It's really gorgeous. And boy, is it ever aligned with the show that we are doing today.
Yes. Thank you. Most of my other songs are usually like happy or fun. This one's the only real ballad that I have. And it's just about sticking together with family during like hard times and appreciating them.
So great. Great advice. I feel the same way. What was it like for you to record the song? I know you have a very unique experience when you record. You've told me that sometimes you'll come home and have a good cry after because it's so much emotion and so much energy.
Oh, this one I probably cried in studio as well. So
that's so awesome. I don't want to make our audience wait. It's too good. So without further ado, let's all have a listen to this upcoming release. It's pretty exciting. Stand Beside Me by Jules Halpern.
I miss you.
Due to international copyright law, podcasts are unable to include music. Music can only be played on the live radio broadcast. Finding Your Bliss airs every Saturday at 1 p.m. If you'd like to hear this artist's music, you can find the link to our Finding Your Bliss SoundCloud in the episode description. Oh my God, Jules, that was gorgeous.
Thank you.
I just want to call you the voice girl. Like your voice is so gorgeous. I actually have a real prediction about this one. I think this is really going to go crazy. Yeah, it's the lyrics are beautiful. Your voice is magnificent in it. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling something different with this song?
I love it. I also want to mention that Autumn Rowe also wrote it with Scott and I. This version isn't mastered or anything. This isn't the one that we're going to put out yet. But so this is a very special treat.
Wow.
Because this is the actual version. I wasn't sure. I like this one a lot. I'm a bit of a critic of myself and my voice. Also, this one I recorded when I was like 15 or something, or 16. Now that I listen to it, I really am like, oh, like there's parts that I really am like, oh, I really, really could do that better now. When I listen to it, I hope that the emotions will come through because I feel like, I don't know, for me, when I listen to it, I'm not like, oh, my voice sounds so good here. It's more so like, oh, but I really love the song and I think it's very emotional and it's one of the songs that I actually really felt connected to writing. I just was so grateful when I was writing it. And Scott was recording with John the night before. And then I came in and I think he played one of my songs or something to him. And then he said he was going to come back in and write with me. And I was like, whoa.
A couple of notes here. First of all, everyone, that was not mastered. That was raw. And raw, it's like Grammy Award winning. So let's just say that. Also, as a life coach, I have to say, we are so critical of ourselves, aren't we? Because my goodness, that's beautiful and unbelievable. And we're so hard on ourselves. And goodness, it's just so good. And you are so talented, Jules.
Thank you so much.
It just kind of makes my heart, I don't know, just go, wow, wow, wow. That talent is just...
You're very, very sweet. I also wanted to mention, I'm going to be doing some vocal coaching for a long while now, for ages 5 to 14 or around that area. I'm flexible. You can contact me at juleshalpernvocals@gmail.com. If you have kids that are interested in getting vocal lessons, I'm going to be doing Zoom and in person. I can come to you. And I'm around the like St. Clair Christie area. So I'm also beginner guitar. So if anyone has kids that want to do it, I'm here.
So guys, if you want your daughter or son to sound like Jules Halpern one day, if that's even possible, I don't know. But if you want to be trained by an unbelievable singer-songwriter like Jules, what a great gift that is to give to one of your children or all of your children, 5 to 14 years old. What a gift. What do you think characterizes you from all the other vocal coaches who are teaching 5 to 14 year olds?
I have a lot of experience with children. Also, I'm kind of closer in age than most of the other vocal coaches, but I also have experience with kids with mental and physical disabilities as well. And personally, I have a lot of experience with that. And I'm very patient. I just want to make them better and enjoy what they do or are beginning to do. I'm also very lucky that I was trained by, and I still am trained by Marla Joy, who's a very, very talented vocal coach. And I know that a lot of people she doesn't accept as students would want still some of her wisdom passed down, which I think I have. I feel like I can really help people with, I know where to place stuff in your voice to make the sounds that you want to happen. And I've learned that from my time at ESA, Etobicoke School of the Arts, when I would kind of like help some of my classmates with certain notes and stuff. It felt like, oh, this is something that I'd be really interested in doing.
That's so cool. What do you love about teaching, or what do you think you're going to love about teaching?
Interacting with kids. I like kids. Like, I'm happy to be there for them. And I'm just excited to like help them grow and have them be excited about singing. And also any genre I'm happy to coach in. Because I went to school for musical theater, but I feel like my main genre is soul and pop, but really anything they want to do, I can help out with.
And she's saying this because Jules can sing anything. And you're so talented.
Thank you.
What is bliss for you these days?
Bliss for me is obviously music and singing, but also I would say now that it's the spring, I think that just I'm feeling so grateful and happy. Also, I'm done university. Bliss is just the absence of that stress and being able to just enjoy the nice weather. And bliss for me is springtime, I guess.
Isn't that wonderful? This could that be a song coming soon?
Springtime.
Bliss for me is springtime. I have vibes about that. I don't know.
Sounds jazzy.
Yeah, it sounds really good. What is the best way, Jules, for people to contact you, connect with you on social media, and really just listen to more of your gorgeous and incredible music?
My Instagram is jules.halpern. That's J-U-L-E-S dot H-A-L-P-E-R-N. And you can contact me there. If you want to contact me about vocal coaching, you can DM me on Instagram. And you can also contact me at juleshalpernvocals@gmail.com. I'm going to be putting up posters around. So if you see any of those, you can scan the QR code and you can contact me on my email.
That's so great. I want to thank you so much, Jules. Really, you are a gift. Oh, you're a gift, and you are, your music is so beautiful. When is that song coming out, by the way?
May 13th, I think.
Awesome.
Yes.
Awesome. I think that might be right around when this show is airing. So that is fantastic. I love that. Each week we spotlight a super talented singer-songwriter like Jules Halpern on the show. So if you're a singer, please reach out to us. If you're an author, artist, yoga, mindfulness or meditation expert, really anyone who's found is following their bliss, we'd love to hear from you. Also, what did you love about today's show? Are there any guests or topics you'd like us to feature on Finding Your Bliss? Write to us at fyb@findyourbliss.com. For those of you who don't know, I'm also a bliss coach. What does that mean? That means I help you find your passion and purpose and calling and get connected to it and really start living and following your bliss like Jules Halpern is doing. All you have to do is reach out to me at findyourbliss.com/coaching. I'm also in the Insight Timer, the number one free meditation app. All you have to do is search up Judy Liebrack. And of course, you can always follow us at The Bliss Minute on Instagram, TikTok, and Facebook. I would love to thank our wonderful guests, Rachel Kaplan and Jules Halpern, for being on the show today. Also, thank you to Mag Ruffman, Siobhan Kylie, producer Eva Shabatai, Olivia Vigiani, audio engineer Giuliani Annunziello, Ben Thomas, senior editor Lauren Kaminsky, video editor Sierra Brown Rodriguez, audio producer Faz Kazi, and everyone here at Zoomer. And of course, a big thank you to our sponsor, the Create Fertility Center, and also to our segment sponsor, Ashford Cleaners. For everyone here, I'm Judy Liebrack, reminding you all to take one step closer to finding your bliss.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.